on Triple J.
Hello, all aboard the Veronica and Lewis podcast train. Passenger, you. Driver, us. We're not qualified. Thanks for being here.
You'd be sitting on my knee. Yeah. Well, I'd be driving. Like what my grandpa used to do when I would drive the tractor.
That's right, because you are my grandmother in a weird twist.
No, but I just like to have you on my knee.
That's true. Well,
get off right now.
Okay.
For the purposes of this podcast.
Give me a second, I'll go into my own microphone. All right, fine. I'll be back on your knee as soon as we've stopped recording, though.
Imagine if you really did. So big.
We should get on to what was in the podcast this week. Massive, massive Splendor in the Grass lineup announced, and a couple of the biggest names on it were on our show. We spoke to Alex James from Blur, who, apart when he wasn't talking about cheese, was telling us really interesting tidbits about the recording of Blur's new album.
Yeah, it was kind of fascinating learning about how really genuinely quickly they did it when they were in Hong Kong. I always thought when I read those articles that they might have been little fibs.
Yeah.
But seems like it checks out.
Well, he didn't seem like a liar. He just seemed like a motor-mouth truth teller.
Yeah. Michael Shea, who you might know if you ever watch Saturday Night Live, but actually they're so hard to watch, aren't they, Saturday Night Live? Unless you watch the clips on YouTube, unless you've got a VPN, which isn't illegal.
It's not illegal because you should do it.
Yeah. Michael Shea does the weekend update on Saturday Night Live, and he was a bloody great guest. He was fun to have in.
Yeah, he was a delight. Another man who was on the Splendor in the Grass lineup is Kevin Parker from Tame Impala, huge band, massive man, beautiful hair.
Oh, great hair. Yeah. I reckon I looked at a photo of his hair just today and I thought, I'd kill for hair like that.
Oh, yeah. He's Jesus. He's our Jesus.
If anyone did anything to that hair, he would lose his mind. If anyone, like Noel Fielding, nullified it. In fact, someone came in yesterday and said to me, hey, nice Noel. And I looked at them and went, what the fuck? You're talking about.
Yeah.
And then I realized that they were looking at my filthy hair.
Yeah. It's a nice fringe. The new Star Wars trailer came out, so we did a Star Wars themed sex tip. And the other big thing that everybody bloody loves,
Game of Bloody Thrones.
Yes, they bloody love it. And we had one of the most delightful men in the show who turned out to be a delightful man in real life. Daniel Portman, who plays Sir Podrick Payne, the noble squire with the magic penis.
Yeah. In fact, having seen the first episode of Game of Thrones, I was watching it the whole time going, oh, please don't be killed in the first episode. That will make us having chatted to him really annoying. Yeah. But we also talked to Black Summer, who is the youngest Australian dance producer, we think, the youngest we've found so far, unless you... If you want to give us a hot tip of someone younger, we'll take the interview.
Oh, yeah. If there's someone doing some sort of sweet beats in a fetus, we'll put it on air.
And Pablo Francisco, who is an impressionist, an improviser, and just, wow, that guy has a lot of energy, and he really channeled it all onto our show.
Yeah, we did a live movie trailer using suggestions from listeners, and it was, yeah, high energy. And the Splendor lineup has just been released. There are some huge names on it. Ryan Adams, Tame Impala of Monsters and Men, Mark Ronson, Florence and the Machine. But one of the very big names that we are so excited about at the top of that list is Blur. And we've got Alex James on the line, cheese farmer, but perhaps better known as the bassist from Blur. Hey, Alex, how are you?
Good morning, good morning. Cheers. Well, it's taken us a while to get back there, man, but I'm so glad we're coming.
Yeah.
That's some lineup Splendor this year, isn't it?
Yes. Yikes.
That's like all my favourite bands playing.
My gosh, you haven't been here since 1997. Did we do something wrong?
Well, I mean, it's taken us 16 years to make a record. So, you know, it was always going to take us a while to get back and do a gig. But we're all dead excited. I particularly got some great friends in Australia from the time I've spent there. Well, you know, what's not to like? Although, I mean, everything, Royal Blood playing. God, blimey. It's brilliant, brilliant line. Azalea Banks, Dandy Warhols, yikes. Get ready.
Yeah, an incredible Splendor in the Grass hype, man. This is amazing.
Man, it's going to be good. Is Heston's restaurant open in Sydney yet? What's happening with that?
No.
Is that all going to plan?
It's just opened in Melbourne, but it hasn't opened.
In Melbourne? Okay. René Redzepi's opening in Sydney. It's like all the chefs in the world are suddenly opening in Australia. What's going on there? It's like it's taken over from the UK. It's like the exciting food place in the world.
Are you going to be bringing some of your food to Australia?
Yeah, I always bring a suitcase full of cheese, of course. Natch.
So I guess, will you spend a bit of time either side of being here for Splendor, just to hang out and go to restaurants?
Yeah, well, definitely, yeah. You know, making recipes that rock. You know, which was me and Matt Stone just hanging out, visiting farms and restaurants and cooking and discovering Australian food. You know, there's so much going on there. Like all the big cheese making factories in the UK are based on Australian ones. Like you do it better than anyone else out there.
Oh wow! Well, I will have to
really really highly technologized, like it's like Willy Wonka cheese making in Australia.
My gosh, before we had this chat, I kind of just looked, I did all my research on Splendor, not so much on cheese, but now it's a misdirection.
well, there's plenty of good food at Splendor.
Yeah. When Blur first started doing festivals back like a long time ago, the food was, the food and the toilets were just appalling. But like now, because they're just sort of much, so much better understood, it's got far more civilized, I think.
How does it feel for you guys doing festivals like Glastonbury and Splendor these days compared to when you first started doing them?
Well, it's funny because we've just got, you know, it's like 16 years since we made our last record. But because we've known each other since we were like 19 or something, it's like when we start playing together, the whole of the rest of the world just falls away. And it's like I'm 19 again. It's really funny. I do feel like a child again.
Because you guys play so many massive shows now. Do you guys ever play small shows like sort of like you would have when you were, 18?
Yeah. I mean, we just played through the album from start to finish at like a 300 capacity venue in London a couple of weeks ago, and you know they're really exciting as well, but. I mean, you can't beat like a massive thousands of voices all singing singing the big hits and crying their eyes out. You know, that's I mean, I guess that's what made us feel compelled to record another record, because it was all sort of drifting apart. And I thought I'd never hear that noise again. I thought it was all over. And then the Olympics were in London in 2012, and we were asked to do this big show on the last day in Hyde Park, and the Olympics was such a brilliant thing for Britain, and London was just ready to go on the last day, and we did this show, and it's like the best concert we've ever done, and we were just wow, maybe we should do a bit more. So we went to a few places the year before last where we've never been before, and it was just overwhelming, like all these young kids singing every word and crying and getting hysterical, and it's like wow, well maybe it's worth trying to record a record. And we did in 4.5 days in Hong Kong.
The Splendor lineup did come out this morning, and so excited to say that Blur is on it. And Alex James from Blur is on the phone with us right now. Just quickly, though, is there anything you wanted to tell us about Go Out?
It's just the kind of dirty... It's the sort of thing, like, I think that's at our best. Just kind of really relaxed and gritty and dirty and a little bit nasty, but somehow alluring. Yeah, that's like a rock band kicking it, man.
So tell us, your album The Magic Whip is coming out in just a couple of weeks' time. What do you reckon? Will you play through the album when you do your set at Splendor and play the old hits too?
Yeah, we better, hadn't we? Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think it's really nice to have some new music to play. But we'll do a few that everybody knows as well. So you better.
Yeah, well, the album is coming out in just a couple of weeks, as we said. It's been a while since you've released an album. How are you feeling about having that feeling again?
There was a point. You know, I've longed for it for so long. It's been something I've really wished would happen. But there was a point 5 minutes into the press conference when we were announcing it. When I had this awful feeling, I looked over at the other three and thought, oh, I remember this. I remember you. I remember why we split up. But then you start playing the music and it's just so healing and joyful and triumphant. And like when we started playing the records, like the first like couple of days of just playing the new songs, I couldn't sleep at all. It was just so utterly exhilarating. I mean, it's a miracle baby very, very late in a marriage, really, this album. None of us is very most unexpected, but we're all over the moon.
What is a magic whip?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Damon. I don't know. It's got some sort of shimmering ambiguities. It makes a... I guess it's... I really don't know. It's our new album.
Good answer. That's it's mysterious.
Well, you mentioned before that you recorded it for 4.5 days in Hong Kong. How did that happen?
We were doing some shows and we were supposed to be going to Taipei in Taiwan from Hong Kong, and there was a last minute kind of, I don't know what happened, the gig was cancelled. So we were stuck in Hong Kong for 5 days, and we thought, well, maybe we should go and try and make a record. And we booked a little studio in Hong Kong and just absolutely, completely played our hearts out. It was really spontaneous, completely unselfconscious. And because we'd been playing together a bit and enjoying each other's company, the music just flowed. You know, it normally takes months and months to make a record. But I think if we'd have been booked into a big posh studio with a big name producer to sort of try and make a comeback record, we'd have all have sort of cacked our pants and bottled it. I don't know. You know, it was difficult keeping it all secret. And, you know, we'd literally kept it under wraps until the day after it was mastered, because it was a mountain to climb, you know, making a record that I think we all felt was good enough. But, you know, fortunately, this brief period of just all out going for it in Hong Kong paid off, and the record was kind of there at the end of it. So hooray for that.
Do you reckon workshopping the record in China had any impact on the sound of the album?
Yeah. I mean, it's quite an exciting... I mean, Blur albums do tend to have locations, a bit like James Bond films. You know, the last one was set in Morocco, and then there was a kind of Icelandic period. I think it's quite good to sort of take yourself away from the world that you're familiar with. And Hong Kong is an incredibly exhilarating, exciting place at the moment. You know, it's so different and so similar to Western cities at the same time, and there's just a real sense of boundless new horizons and the future there. But really, when you get in a recording studio, it's just a room with no windows. You could be anywhere in the world, but it does feel like Blur in Hong Kong in 2015.
You said it was so spontaneous. Did you have any concepts or themes for the album when you started?
Well, there was a bunch of, you know, Damon's always got a bunch of ideas for songs up his sleeve. So there was like those as starting points, and there was other stuff that sort of spontaneously generated in the studio. But really, the way that the way that it's always happened since our very first rehearsal has been that we just get in a room and just switch on and just kick the can around. You know, just, I don't know, it's not much talking about it. It's just doing it. And fortunately, it seems to work.
Oh, well, we're very excited to see you in the next few months. What will you be doing between now and then?
I'm going to Paris tomorrow to do TV stuff, and then a bit of promo on the album, then a couple of shows at playing Hyde Park in the UK, and a couple of festivals in Europe, and then we're out to Oz. But yeah, we're not doing many shows, but I've got my own festival to organise at home. So it's really good to. It's great when we do other festivals because I nick all the best ideas and myself.
And that's a sort of music and food festival, right?
Yeah, music and food. Yeah, exactly. On the farm, like when Blur split up, I got married and my wife and I bought a farm on our honeymoon, and we sort of spent the last 10, 11 years turning it into a sort of cheese paradise. And it sort of made sense to have a food and music festival. So yeah, that's what we do. So there's always like something to do on that. Every day, some decision to make or other. It's brilliant. I love it, but it is really good doing other festivals because you learn something every time you go to another festival. You're like, oh, that's good. Or, oh, I'm not going to do that. but I've got to say the Splendor lineup is like nothing. It's just like literally a who's who of who's yeah.
Yeah.
It's brilliant, isn't it? But it'll be great to see Florence again.
Oh,
I worked with her a while ago. She's utterly brilliant.
Yeah, have you heard much of her new stuff?
Yeah, the single, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's good.
Well, Alex, we've loved chatting to you. We can't wait to have you in the country soon with a giant suitcase of cheese. but we're going to put on another one of the tracks from the Magic Whip, Lonesome Street. Can you tell us a little bit about how this one came together?
This one just like snapped together straight away one rainy morning in Hong Kong in May, and it just appeared out of nothingness in about 20 minutes flat.
So the crack of a magic whip.
Exactly. Can't wait to see you in Australia, guys. It's going to be so good to come back and let rip.
Alex, we've loved chatting to you. Genuinely cannot wait to see you in the country. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Awesome. Great speaking to you guys. Nice one. See you in July.
And in the studio with us right now is a man who is here for the Melbourne Comedy Festival, starting his show tonight for five whole nights, is Michael Shea. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, how are you? How are you settling into Melbourne?
Oh, man. This is a great city. I always love coming here. I'm jet lagged, but I feel like $100 and the shows are going to be great.
$100 American or Australian? What are we talking?
$100 American.
Wow. Big time.
I'm bragging because last time I was here, it was like 2 or 3 years ago. Your dollar was kicking our ass. Mm. And now, ha!
You own us now.
Yeah, well, you're like the only economy that's not as good as ours.
Yeah, we're sorry about that. Thanks for coming here and sticking the boot in. We really appreciate that.
So come to the show and support.
An hour of insults about your entire nation.
No, I actually love Melbourne. I know this sounds like I'm pandering now, but really, I do love Melbourne. It's a fun city. I don't know how to drive, so it's a walking city, and it's beautiful, it's clean. It's like nice New York. It's better.
Do you really not know how to drive? You don't have your license?
No, I'm from Manhattan, and we don't drive there.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, you're very busy. You're back at home. You're doing, doing SNL. You've been there for a while. But you've been doing the update, Weekend Update, which is huge. How's that been going?
It's been fun. I mean, you get to do jokes on TV. It's a dream come true. Mm. It's just a fun thing. It's as fun as you would think it is, It's stressful because it's a lot of work and it's so much that goes into getting the show since it's live. And I don't think people realize how hard it is to do a live show. There's a reason why nobody does it. But, so it's very stressful. But it's a lot of fun when you step away from it and you're like, wow, I can't believe we put that together.
Yeah, you hear such interesting experiences and accounts of the writer's room at SNL. What's your experience of it?
Well, we are kind of a different generation, I think there was a lot of horror stories that you would hear from, a while ago, but it's not the case anymore. We're kind of all just fun kids that like to do comedy and we get to live. It's strange. Mm. I'm going to really miss it.
Oh, why are you leaving it?
I'm announcing my retirement right here on your show.
God.
Scoop.
What a bombshell.
That's it. My name is Michael. I came all the way to Australia to let you guys know that I'm no longer on SNL.
You're staying here with your strong American dollars in your wallet.
That's right. I'm going to meet me a half Australian, half Chinese woman.
Is that the dream?
With beautiful, strong legs, and we're going to ride the tram every day. And we're going to eat Vegemite and eggs with tomatoes and Tim Tams. And I'm losing my mind, dude.
That's some incredible local knowledge there.
I've been here. I like it here. You think I'm kidding? I like it here.
Do you have to do the thing where you sort of naturalize your show? Like when you come to Australia, you go, oh, all right, I won't say Lower East Side Manhattan. I'll say South Yarra.
No, that's patronizing.
It's so annoying.
It's very annoying. I will say where I am, though. I do think that it's important to let people know that, listen, I'm in your town and I'm not just, I don't have to read the city on my hand, the first time I came here, I was nervous because it was, I hadn't played internationally a lot, And I was like, man, they're not going to get anything that I'm saying. And then I got into the hotel room and I turned on the TV and it was like 8 o'clock and they were playing Gilligan's Island and Get Smart. And I'm like, well, if they get comedy from 1974 America, I'm pretty sure they'll understand my references. But the world is so much smaller now as far as with internet and social media, where everybody knows what everybody's talking about now, So I don't feel worried.
Yeah, we only have just got Gilligan's Island, though. That's fresh for us.
Yeah. Am I the first one to let you know that it's old?
Don't tell us that whether or not they get off the island. I'm only up to season 3.
Hey, what's your take on this? Yesterday, we...
I don't think they should vote. Oh, wait. Who are we talking about? I don't know which group it is, but I'm against them.
No, I was going to say, yesterday we played a thing on our show where we accidentally didn't say that we should do a spoiler alert when we played. It was explaining Game of Thrones, the last season. How far do you reckon you need to do spoilers?
I don't watch any show. I think if you named the top 10 shows of this decade, I've seen none of them. So I don't care about spoilers at all. Listen, the Titanic is the most successful movie of all time, and we all knew how that was going to end.
Yeah, right.
Just enjoy it. If it's good, it's good.
And we're talking to Michael Shea, who's in the country for Comedy Festival. We were mentioning before, Michael, that we saw you on this incredible list. It was Rolling Stone's Funniest 50 People, which is pretty massive. But I just saw on that list that you were two places behind NBA player Charles Barkley. Did that hurt?
It hurt a lot.
I was like,
thank you for bringing that up.
Because I was watching your stuff. I'm like, it's great. I'm a fan of yours. And I'm like, you know, I was a fan of Charles Barkley's basketball in the 90s, but not a huge fan of his comedy. What was going on there?
I have no idea. I don't know. It's like this world is so list happy. They always have to put everything in categories, and this is the best, and this is why. And people, no, that's not true. And I don't care. You know, I get lucky, you know. I'm very lucky that I get to, you too, you know. We're very fortunate. We get to do things that we actually enjoy doing for a living. And that's what's the most important. I was surprised that they knew who I was. But at that point, I wasn't even on TV, so.
Yeah, right. How did you, because I noticed like on IMDb, Saturday Night Live is your first professional TV writing gig. How did you get discovered?
Well, from stand-up, I was doing stand-up, and oddly enough, Colin Jost, who was head writer at the time, he's head writer with him and Seth were the head writers at the time, and they asked me if I wanted to come in and do come in as a guest writer for the show, and I was like, no, but yeah. I mean, I didn't want to do it because I never wrote sketch before, and it just seemed so overwhelming, you know? But I came in just to, because I didn't know exactly what I was going to be doing, and it was so much fun, and it was such a cool environment, and they asked me to stay, and it was a good fit, and it was really, I got lucky, I got super lucky. I just, they saw me, and they thought that I'd be good at something that I'd never thought I could do. You never know. You just try it, and people, sometimes they see something, and they're right, you know.
Yeah, it must have been pretty wild this year doing it with.
Sometimes they're wrong too.
when did they? What was the last time someone was like, "Yeah, Michael could do that," and you couldn't?
I don't know. Waking up in time, taking care of a family. I think I'm just kidding. Well, I'm just trying to tell you kids out there is follow your dreams unless you have a job with insurance.
What is your show at Melbourne Comedy Festival about? Is it got a thread or?
Man, it's about nothing. It's just me trying to entertain people for an hour. You know, like I like to keep it as free and loose as possible. I like to be in the room with the people. So I don't like giving the show a title. And if you review it and it sucks, the next show would be completely different.
Yeah.
So see it twice.
Has having like a high profile on TV changed the way that you have to do stand up? Like, is it harder to take risks now?
No, not with stand up. It's easier with stand-up. It's harder everywhere else. It's harder when you on social media. It's harder in interviews. It's harder walking down the street or at a party, but it's not harder. On stage, it's easier, actually, just because more people are coming to see me that know kind of what I do, and if they bought a ticket to see it, they're expecting something that seems honest, you know?
Mm.
So it's a little easier, but everywhere else is harder.
Yeah, right. Because you did quit Twitter. You, like, bailed out of that social medium.
I quit Twitter just because I wasn't good at it. I don't know how to be a celebrity on Twitter. I only know how to be me on Twitter, you know? So it was just a thing where I was tired of getting phone calls from management and publicists saying, hey, man, you can't do that. You know, they're trying to make you look like a crazy person. Everything I say, they would, you know. The thing about social media that sucks is, For comedy, when you read comedy, not everything reads as a joke. So if I write it on Twitter,
yeah.
If I tweet it that I'm leaving the show, it's a bigger thing, you know? And people don't look at it as something silly. They look at it as, oh, that's a statement, you know? And it's the context belongs to the person writing the article, not you. It's out of your hands. I don't like that feeling. So everything that's on stage, I can control, you know?
Well, we're looking forward.
You can hear the love in my voice.
It's cutting low.
We're looking forward to hearing and seeing you being yourself at the shows you're going to be doing tonight at the Hi-Fi, and then for the next five nights, just in time to stick around for all of the end of festival parties. Good timing.
Well done. Is there anything else that you've got planned after you leave this country? Are you working on anything else at the moment?
No, I just Just Tinder. You can find me there. Just keep swiping. I'll be there.
The one social media you're still in control of.
That's the one social media. I do everything on Tinder.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to chat to us. All the best for your shows this week. It's been great to have you.
This has been a lot of fun, and thank you guys for inviting me up.
And the lineup for Splendor came out yesterday. Among a crazy list of guests was Tame Impala, and we've got Kevin Parker from Tame Impala on the line from California. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going?
Really good. How are you? You just played Coachella last weekend. You've got it all over again this weekend. What are you up to in the gap between?
We're just practicing in LA at the moment, and we're in this big rehearsal studio complex thing, and we're rehearsing next to Paul McCartney.
What?
Yeah, we can just hear him pumping out old Beatles tunes next door, and there's no doubt on the other side. So it's like we're all just freaking out.
That's wild. Can you just sneak across and peek in the window at what Paul McCartney's doing?
Oh, we did yesterday, but now I think he's actually here. Like, he wasn't here the whole yesterday, but I think a few security guards would have something to say. We're very respectful, we're doing all that kind of, we're not just totally fanning out.
What are you rehearsing for?
Oh, just shows and stuff. Just because we desperately need to rehearse, that kind of stuff.
Okay, just rehearsing the new album because you haven't played it that much?
Oh, yeah, we haven't played it at all.
Well, you played it on the weekend. How did it go?
We played a couple of new songs. But yeah, it was good. I mean, I couldn't have expected any more, really. It was great. For us, when we try a new song, we're just happy to get through it the whole way. without something catastrophic happening.
Good. Set the bar low and jump over it.
Exactly. Just sit the bar on the ground.
Well, we're so excited to hear your new music when you guys play at Splendor. Well, you played in Splendor in 2010, 2012. What's different, do you reckon, about the way that Tame Impala plays a live set now?
Question. I think for us, as people on stage, it's very much the same. I think we fool ourselves into having a slightly more professional attitude. there's more things going on. There's so many things they're doing on stage that are more technologically advanced than we used to. So yeah, we can't get as drunk before gigs anymore, that's for sure.
In what way? What sort of technological advancements have you done? Just more instruments?
Well, put it this way, if you listen to Let It Happen and try to imagine us doing that as a band, then you kind of start to get a good idea.
Doesn't seem like you have enough people.
I mean, there's enough people. We got five guys, five of us, and there's always, there's technology. We've got loop pedals and filter modules and buttons and things like that. We get by.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about those singles, Because I'm a Man and Let It Happen. We've been loving them and playing them heaps on Triple J. Did you end up recording the album Currents in Perth?
Yeah, just at my home.
Really?
I got a house. I got my own house a little while ago. And so I've just turned three bedrooms into a studio. Well, two rooms are a recording studio and the other room's a lighting studio. And I say studio, but it's really just rooms. They're still just rooms full of gear. I haven't actually done anything to them.
Wait, a lighting studio, did you say?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I like to sort of get involved with a lot of lights on the Tame set, sort of synchronizing things that happen visually with things that happen with the sound, so that it's more I love it when it happens, when there's this link between the two. So, yeah, so as I'm making a song in one studio, I'll try and sort of go over and do the lighting for it when I get bored of how it sounds.
Yeah. You need a smoke machine room as well, just work on everything.
Oh, don't worry, there's a smoke machine in there. Lights don't look like anything unless it's a smoke machine.
That's amazing because the recording process, you mainly construct the songs, right? Is that what happened with these songs as well? You constructed it and the rest of the band joined in later?
Yeah, well, that's why rehearsal is such a funny thing for us, because we're literally just listening to the album that I just made in my, it used to be bedroom, now it's room, and try and learn the songs as they were a cover band or something. That's kind of what it feels like. I just do most of it myself.
We've been loving playing Let It Happen. Also, Because I'm a Man, the first single that you released. They're quite different. Because I'm a Man's much more sort of laid back. Is that the sort of stuff we can expect to hear on Currents when it comes out?
It's hard to say, to be honest. I mean, I think it's pretty, definitely, there's definitely a lot of different kind of things on there. It's definitely my most varied, album with the most variation that I've done. I think I already get the feeling no two songs are alike. I'm not sure if everyone says that when they release an album, but that's how it feels.
Well, you mix these two singles yourself, which you haven't done on previous tracks. You've usually had Dave Friedman working with you. Is that the case for the whole album?
Yeah. Just decided to take the leap of faith.
Is there anything that you don't do now?
Plenty. Oh, don't worry. But I'm working on that.
That's incredible. Do you have
like each time I take on another, feat, about halfway through, I sort of wish I'd just let someone else do it, because you take on the sort of the joy of doing something yourself, but you also take on the responsibility.
Well, the results at the moment.
Like,
seem...
halfway through mixing, I was like, oh man, I wish I got someone else to mix it.
Well, we're pretty excited to hear it all when you come to Splendor and you play First Australian Show in a little while. The lineup, I assume you've seen it and you've seen Mark Ronson's on it. Are you planning any on-stage collaborations?
I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, put it this way, I'm waiting to see as well.
Yeah, right.
I'm not just trying to be elusive.
The other,
but it seems quite fitting, doesn't it?
It does seem like a pretty good coincidence. It has to be admitted. From this side of the fence, it looks like it would make sense.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. That's how it looks from our side of the fence too.
Okay. Yeah, because Pond are going to be there too. Of course, old friends of yours. Are you guys? I guess you might be in contact with them. Is there any sort of planned collaboration with them? Maybe.
I don't know. I'll have to go inside and ask them.
half of them
are with half of them are with me now.
Yeah.
So any idea when Currents is going to be released? We haven't found that out yet, have we?
Hasn't been released, no. I mean, I guess that's just the way it is these days with such a fluid, music scene. No one really knows if albums are going to be, announced, a month before, that they come out straight away. So, but I'm kind of loving that being the case. It's all very mysterious and changeable.
Yeah, is Let It Happen definitely going to be on the album?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Great. Well, apart from the rest of it, good luck for Coachella this weekend. I know that you were joking that you were going to screw up your songs at Coachella, but you seem to do pretty well in a high-pressure environment. And
just don't jinx us.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, we can't wait to see you in the country, and you've got so many gigs to play before then, before you see us, so you'll be a well-oiled machine, so polished.
Hopefully. Yeah, you'd think so by then, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on the lighting.
Please do. That'll make me happy.
Yeah. Kevin Parker from Tame Impala, thanks so much for chatting to us. We can't wait to hear more from the album, and we can't wait to have you back for Splendor in the Grass.
Cheers, guys. Yeah, can't wait to be back. Oh, yeah, oh,
yeah. Sex tip of the week.
Sex tip of the week.
Now it's time for another sex tip of the week, brought to you by
Jedi Grandmaster Yoda.
Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you?
Sex tip of the week.
Hello there.
Hi there.
So great to have you with us, and so what an exciting theme to always be introduced with.
Yes, indeed. It's epic, isn't it?
Now, as we're talking to you, the first episode of Game of Thrones Season 5 has just gone to air. A couple of episodes have also leaked online, but most of us will be watching it tonight. Will we be seeing you in the first episode, Daniel?
Yes, you will be. I can't say anything else, but you will be seeing me in the first episode.
What are the penalties? Are you sat down and told if you give anything away, this will happen to you?
We are all fitted with explosive ankle bracelets that are likely to go off if we give anything else away. So I don't fancy losing my leg.
Yeah, I don't mind you losing your leg, but we're near you too, so that would be a disaster.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd have to be really careful though, especially if you had a few drinks one night that you might not accidentally. Have you got close to saying any of the plot lines?
I don't think it's within my best interests to tell you how close I've got.
Oh, well played, my friend.
Well, it must be such an unusual experience for you over the last few years. Game of Thrones has just gotten so massive. Your character's so recognisable as well. How does it feel to be part of a show as massive as Game of Thrones has become?
It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a young actor to be involved in something that has such a a large reach and a large viewership around the world. It's, you know, I think it's the most popular TV show in the world at the moment. So to be involved in it and to have been involved in it since fairly early on in its process is it's really, you know, the longer it goes on, the more fortunate I feel I am to have been involved in it.
Well, you're going around at the moment sort of on a tour with a bunch of pop cultural icons. Is it, how is that experience for you doing the kind of Comic-Con-y circuit?
It's nice to have been called a pop culture icon. Certainly, that's probably the highlight of the tour so far. No, it's really nice. It's great to be able to see people who appreciate my work and the work of the, you know, the other actors from the different shows. It's very humbling to realise how, you know, how many people watch these things worldwide, and it's great to come out.
I always wonder if it's like a sort of music festival for you, like being bands, like whether you just sort of hang out backstage and have a beer with like cartoon characters or Doc from Back to the Future or something.
Yeah, no, it kind of is like that, actually, except we're much cooler than the musicians at the festivals. We don't wear sunglasses inside.
Well, for most of the show so far, up until the end of the most recent season, you were hanging out, your characters are hanging out with Tyrion, who's played by Peter Dinklage. Mm-hmm. Well, how's it been working with him?
He's, you know, that's the question I get asked a lot. He's a really great guy, actually. And for a guy like himself who's been thrust into the limelight and become a star quite as quickly, and you know, he's in demand as an actor, and he's very recognisable, and it doesn't affect him in the slightest. He's a very, very cool guy. He's a great actor. He's just as charming and witty and funny as you'd expect, and he was very, very good to me when we worked together, and I learned a lot from working with him and Jerome Flynn, who plays Bronn. So yeah, it was a complete pleasure, because I'd been a fan of Peter's work from when he did a film called The Station Agent a few years previous, and it was just so exciting to get to work with him, and he was everything that you would expect him to be. He's a complete gentleman.
Oh, can't wait to see him tonight while we watch Game of Thrones. You're on Triple J with Veronica and Lewis, and we're joined by Daniel Portman, who plays the character Podrick in Game of Thrones.
Now, Daniel, you fans of the show, I think, would know your character best for one particular scene, I think. I'm sure you get asked about it a lot.
Don't know what scene you're talking about.
It is a scene where his lovemaking skills are really on display when he's sort of sent to have his virginity taken with three prostitutes. So if you haven't heard it, it sounds like this.
You were gone a long time. I trust you got your money's worth, or should I say my money's worth?
Oh, it was a gift, Podrick. This is more than I give you in a year.
He's a squire. You don't pay him.
Oh, then it's much more than I give you in a year.
I wouldn't take it, my lord.
They were happy enough to take it when I gave it to them.
What did you tell them? I didn't tell them anything.
What did you do to them?
Lots of things.
And they seem to like these things?
Yes, my lord. Of course they seem to like it. They're paid to seem to like it.
Only they weren't paid.
What are you saying? These ladies enjoyed him so much they gave him the time for free.
Oh, you must just read a scene like that and go, boom, boom, boom. This is going to be a good episode for me.
Yeah, that's the Ron Jeremy moment.
Has it raised expectations for you in real life?
Ruined my personal life completely. Yeah, the weight of expectation is crushing.
Mm. Well, your character, Podrick, just is one of maybe two or three in the series that seems genuinely decent. Do you know what's coming up for you? Do you turn bad?
I do know what's coming up for me to a certain extent. As for telling you what's going to happen to me, that is not going to happen.
Just wink. Just wink or nod.
bombshell.
Yes, indeed.
Because you, obviously, were saying you were spending a lot of time with Peter Dinklage's character. Uh-huh. Up until the end of the season, we saw you hang out, your character hang out more with Brienne, very tall. How are you settling into that new duo? Is it fun?
It's, you know, it's great to sort of mix it up a bit and to not be working with the same group of people exclusively. So working with Gwendolyn, my character is a bit more fleshed out now and a bit more developed. So as an actor, it's a bit more enjoyable for me to be sort of coming to the forefront of the relationship a bit more with her, which is cool. And she's a great actress. And she, again, is very funny. She's got a great infectious personality, and we have a lot of fun together. So it's been a lot of fun working with her over the last couple of years.
It looks like such a crazy, huge team to be working on the sets of Game of Thrones with. What does the production look like? Is there, when you walk onto set, is there just huge catering tents, you know, big sets?
It's massive. We have two separate sound stages, two separate studios in Belfast that are side by side to film in. And it is massive. I think it's you know, aside from the viewing figures and everything, I think in terms of the manpower and the production that goes into it, it is the biggest show in TV history.
What's the rap party like?
I've never actually been to one.
Oh,
why?
Yeah, I usually finish up shooting before the end of the season finishes shooting. And it's one of those things. I'm either away doing something else at the time of the rap party, or I'm not in Belfast. So it's a shame. I'm sure I'll get to one eventually, but none yet. I've heard they're very good. Mm. I've heard they're very, very good, though.
Yeah, right. Well, what else are you working on outside of Game of Thrones at the moment?
I've just finished writing my first screenplay. So I'm in the process of sort of shifting that around and trying to find a producer to fund it and help me make that film.
What's the brief synopsis?
It's an alternate view on Romeo and Juliet, because I feel that Romeo and Juliet is a massively overdone and underexplored piece. I think people do it the same way all the time. The characters are always done the same way, and the script doesn't dictate for those characters to be done the same way. It's just people lacking in decisive decision-making skills. They just seem to think that the way it was done the last time is the best way, and I don't really think that that's the best way of doing it.
Oh, well, if you're a producer listening in and you'd like to get in touch with Daniel Portman.
Yeah, give me your money.
I'll take my money. I've got a fiver. It's all yours.
Great, man. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Cool. I want 1% of all returns.
Excellent.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to chat to you. Great to have you back in the country, and we can't wait to see the episode, well, in just a couple hours' time.
Yeah, great. Come to Perth and Adelaide, Oz Comic Con. We're going to be there for a couple of weeks. So, yeah, come and meet us. It'll be a good couple of weekends.
Brilliant.
Awesome. Thanks, heaps.
Cheers. Thanks.
Pretty excited to have a very special guest on this week's edition of People Who Are Better Than You. His name is Rhys Toms, but you might know him as Black Summer, an 11-year-old EDM producer, absolutely killing it in between doing some year six at school. He released some stuff on Unearthed, and the Unearthed team were just like, who is this kid? He is phenomenal. We have him with us now. How you doing, Rhys?
I'm good, thanks.
If you haven't heard any of Reese's stuff under the name Black Summer before, this is a little taste of Toxic Nirvana. From the sounds of some of your music, Reese, it's almost like you've just been at the club so many times, but I don't imagine you have. Have you been to see much live music?
No, I haven't seen any live music besides the some sort of Canberra show or something like that.
So what made you start it? How did you get started on this whole thing?
I started when I was flicking through channels. I accidentally flicked onto a music channel and I heard Skrillex on the TV, and it sounded really cool. So I asked my dad if I could get his album, and I got his album. And after a while listening to that, I thought I would like to make my own kind of music.
Where do you go from there? How do you go from listening to Skrillex and then thinking you wanted to make music like it? How did you learn?
Well, I got a little mini mixing deck from my parents when I was 6 years old, and I just muck around on that for hours and stuff. And for my birthday, one of my birthdays, I had all my friends and family over for a disco, and I had my little mixing deck and a laptop. I was pumping the tunes.
That is awesome.
So how many people were at your first gig then?
Oh, 12 or 8 or something.
Hey, that's pretty good. That's a great start.
Tell us, how did you settle on the name Black Summer?
Well, my dad has a really nice car, and he's got all his photos of his car, and he calls it Black Betty. And we go to Summernats every year. So I got the word black from Black Betty and summer, and I just stuck in McGever and chose that.
It's good. It's a really good name. I reckon often you get like really young people who start bands and they do really like crappy names. And by the time they're like, they've been around for 3 years, they'll have to change it. But I don't see that happening for you.
I've gone through like 5 names.
Oh, really? What else did you have?
Oh, DJ Rage, DJ Summer Soda. I used to want to be a DJ. DJ Tomcat, but there's a guy in Sweden who already has that name, so I changed it to that, Black Summer.
So all of your songs so far are like purely just beats, all instrumental, no samples or lyrics or anything. Are you looking to collaborate to get a vocalist on or anything?
Yeah, I'd love to, because most of my songs right now are just tunes and stuff, and every time I make a song, it sounds great, but I know there's something missing, and that's vocals, and I'm like, oh, I want to put vocals in.
Well, you're already getting some pretty big fans. Some of the guys from Unearthed, when they first heard your music, were so blown away by it, and they knew the kind of people that you've been influenced by, that they swung past with a little message for you. I think we've got some of it now.
Hey, Reece, Flume here. Just wanted to say, keep at it. You're good at the music. My number one tip for you would be to always experiment, always try new things, happy mistakes. Good luck. Peace.
Oh, so cool. How did that feel?
That just felt awesome. I was so excited. I was so much more confident after that video. And, yeah, on his last words, happy mistakes, I got inspired by that verse, and I'm actually making a song that's called Happy Mistakes.
Oh, cool.
Wow. How far away is that from being released?
Oh, I've just started. I'm not even on the first chorus yet.
Beautiful. Well, we want to put on a song of yours right now, if that's cool. We want to play Fist Pump. Is there anything you want to tell us about the song, Reece?
Well, this song was one of my first songs I made when I was probably about 7 or 8.
Really?
Yeah, I know. At the time, I had a Launchpad Mini. And I'd have a program on my iPad that I'd mix all these sounds up and stuff to make my own song. And, yeah, I came up with this song here, Fist Pump, and, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so do we. Well, Reece Toms, it's been so great to chat to you. If people want to learn more, they can head to the Triple J website. The Triple J Unearthed team have put up an amazing video about you and what you do. It's got nearly 60,000 views already. Black Summer, thanks for taking the time to chat to us.
Thank you for having me.
You're with Veronica and Lewis this Friday afternoon. Hope you're having a really good one, getting ready for the weekend. One man who is having a really, really great afternoon is Will McKenna, who is from Year 9 Eltham College and is this year's winner of the Class Clowns Competition. Hey, Will, how are you feeling?
Hi, I'm feeling good. How are you guys feeling?
Not as good as you. I mean, good still, but, you know, not great. Just fine.
Tell us about your day today.
Well, I woke up, caught the train at a very early time to come to the Melbourne Town Hall.
How did it all go? How do you feel like your set went today?
I think it went well, pretty well, I guess.
Well, you were the winner among like 13 other competitors. You must have smashed it.
Oh, I don't want to say that.
My gosh, you kind of sound a bit like Tom Ballard. Do you reckon that, Lewis?
Let's not pigeonhole him. He's just won the first competition. He's got his own original voice.
What are you talking about?
Perfect. What sort of jokes were you doing in your set?
Ranged from my bladder to my grandma to tennis and school and bogans and all that jazz.
And how did you feel? Because the Town Hall's a huge venue. Was it pretty terrifying?
Gosh, it's big. Yeah, it is big. Very terrifying. Mm. I don't want to be one of those people that's like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. It was very, very terrifying.
How did all the other competitors go?
They went so good. Oh, they're so funny. There's so many funny people in Australia.
Because you're very, like, the competition's open for 14 to 18-year-olds. You're just 14. You're at the very start of this. You could take this competition out for the next 4 years.
Oh, That was the only things I can write, though.
No way. Will's going to go on to just, you're a professional now. You got yourself $2,500 for being the winner. What are you going to spend it on?
Oh, my God. Well, the school gets $1,000, I think.
Okay, yeah. Mm.
Yes.
Stationery and whatnot.
Stationery. And I think, I could spend it on fixing up my room because I have a horrible room. I could go on a holiday or I could do the right thing and put it in for university.
Oh, wow. You're so responsible, Will, for a man so young. How long have
Ice
you
cream
been...
truck.
Yes, that's the right answer. How long have you... When was the first time you did stand up for the first time?
It was the first heat.
Oh,
that we had, which was about a month ago.
No way. What made you suddenly decide to do stand-up?
Well, my teacher, Evan. Hi, Evan. He's outside. he came up to me and said, hey, there's this thing called Class Clowns. Would you like to have a go? And I went, okay. And I did.
That's amazing.
Is Evan a funny guy?
Yeah, Evan's funny.
What's with that? You can't call teachers by their first name. What sort of weird school are you going to, Will?
It's Elfin College for you.
Man, that's wild.
And so are you going to go on to be, do you aspire to be a professional comedian?
Oh, I don't aspire to be one, you know, because, I should be, a lawyer or something. But, I like it. I really like it. And if that takes me somewhere, then it'll take me somewhere.
Yeah, well, you could always get yourself a job as a Tom Ballard impersonator because heaps of people on a text line think it too.
Really?
Yeah, weird.
Oh, wow. Mm. I actually am him.
Well, it was great to chat to you, Will. Congratulations. What are you going to do for the rest of the afternoon?
Sleep, probably.
Really? Just going to snooze? No way. Get out there and have a Fanta.
Answer all these texts that people have given me. Well done, well done. Good job, good job.
Oh, it's the best news.
You sound so jaded already for one so young.
Well, lovely to have you on, Will, and we can't wait to hear
about so much.
Stuff you do in the future. Spend the $1,500 wisely.
I will.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you, see ya.
You're on Triple J with Veronica and Lewis. We're joined by comedian and wonderful impressionist Pablo Francisco. Now, you've also brought in your comedy partner, a man who's touring around with you, Steve Kramer. Welcome in the studio, Steve.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
He sounds all like newscasters. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks a lot, guys. It's fantastic.
Back to the news with you there.
Now, Steve, you're going to help Pablo out with this trailer.
Sure.
Yeah, cool. Is that cool? So what we're going to do is we're going to get a few suggestions from a couple of listeners, places like jobs and locations and some, some villains. And then we'll quickly chuck that together in a couple of songs and then we'll deliver a trailer.
Absolutely.
Sounds good.
Magnificent.
We're
all
basically
right.
Making a movie that people, movie trailer that people wish would be made.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay, we've got our first person, Toadie. Are you ready to give us some suggestions?
I reckon... The bad guy should be called Swagmaster 420.
Swagmaster 420?
Okay. Why did you decide that? Is that just off the top of your head?
Just sort of ripping on all the sort of craze in Colorado and all that sort of stuff.
All right.
Sure. Swagmaster 420 sounds very villainous. Thanks for that, Toadie.
See you later, Toadie. My cousin.
Connor from Bendigo. How you doing, Connor?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks.
Can you give us maybe the name of a hero?
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, very good. And what about a job? What job would Jerry Seinfeld do? Don't say comedian.
Geez. I don't know. What does he do in Seinfeld? I don't know.
That's right.
Well, he's a courier.
A courier
would be good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld, the courier. Thanks for that, Connor. And I think we have Jonathan there. Are you two there, Jonathan?
Yep.
Cool. From you, can we grab a location? Just any place, like a town or a city?
Picton.
Or Picton. I should have probably guessed that since you are from Picton.
Or Mittagong, one of the two.
All right. Thanks heaps, Jonathan. We probably might get the rest in text form, I reckon, while we play a couple of songs.
Okay, what else are we looking for in text form?
All right. What we're looking for is something strange that's happened to the world. A public holiday, something like Christmas or Easter or any kind of public holiday, a catchphrase, and something that Jerry Seinfeld, our hero, would love. So something strange happened in the world, public holiday, catchphrase, and something a hero would love. If you text those in, we're going to put them together. And Pablo and Steve, how are you guys feeling about putting this together?
We'll try our best.
All right, awesome. 0439-757-555. You're with Veronica and Lewis, and we're joined by Pablo Francisco and Steve Kramer.
What's happening?
It's good.
Stop.
Right. Good characters going through my head right now.
It's been a bit of a flurry and a bit hectic here, trying to go through all of your hundreds of amazing suggestions that we're putting through to create a film that doesn't exist, but let's be honest, it should.
Yeah, it should. Let's just check out what we got here. We got some villains.
So the villain was suggested by Toady, which is Swagmaster 420.
Toady.
Master.
We know that the hero's name is Jerry Seinfeld. His job is courier. He has a catchphrase. Thank you for the text, which is...
Not in my backyard.
Not in my backyard.
The public holiday that this might fall on, is it? Is Canberra Family Day. And the strange thing that's happened in the world is that there's no longer shadows.
Yeah, people's shadows have gone missing.
Okay.
How are you guys feeling about this?
Here we go. We'll give it a shot. Ready?
All right.
See where it goes.
Steve Kramer, Pablo Francisco, live putting together a trailer for a film that doesn't exist but certainly should.
Get ready from Touchstone Pictures. Proudly presents, in a world where your shadow has disappeared, the one person can only help out. His name, Jerry Seinfeld.
I don't know what's going on here. I don't know. I think I just need to smoke some dope. But who can I smoke it from? Maybe a villain or so? Who could it?
One villain, played by Al Pacino.
Uh-oh. I was dancing with my shadow. Because my shadow is my friend. But now he's gone. Where did he go? Oh, there he is. Say hello to my little friend.
And one man should make sure that when he smokes it, I'm transforming to Arnold Schwarzenegger. So let me tell you something, buddy. Not in my backyard. Get ready. Owen Wilson.
Come on, man. These girls want to get with us. Come on, man.
And also the Crocodile Hunter.
Crikey, look at the size of this DJ's microphone. Yeah.
That's right. Get ready for Brokeback Mountain turn into Shadowback Mountain. This summer, get ready. Hey, get down. Get ready. It's Shag 420.
Come on, man. Let's go.
No, yeah. It's a wrong impersonation. It's supposed to be Al Pacino.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry. I messed it up. Uh-oh.
And I don't know. I keep transforming in...
Get out of my backyard.
Brokeback Shadowback Mountain.
Oh.
That was the most intense, amazing thing I've ever witnessed.
Oh, God. Oh, God. But, you know, wow. I should have went back into the future and tried something else, but it's okay.
Well done, you two.
Well, thank you.
Pablo
thank you.
Francisco and Steve Kramer, what an amazing job of creating a trailer live on the radio. And thank you for all your suggestions on the text line.
Veronica, Lewis, Triple J.